Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Where the Bad Beat jackpot is up to $241,000. Welcome to show number 120 of the Final Table Poker Radio Show. I am Paul Harrah's here at the feature table at Harrah's St. Louis, and my partner Dennis Phillips is in Las Vegas. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul.
We have an action-packed show today, including a visit in about 15 minutes from Real Kid Poker, Daniel Negreanu, who played this weekend in the WPT Championship. He got knocked out yesterday, which was bad news for him, but good news for us because it means he has time to be on the show with us today. And Daniel is going to talk of the many subjects we want to cover with him. We want to talk about this cheater who was in the room and allowed to play. We don't want to get into the controversy right now, but we will when Daniel joins us in just a few minutes. And Dennis, can you believe we are 2 weeks away from the first bracelet event of the 2011 World Series of Poker?
I actually can't. This is amazing. I could swear it was about a month ago that we just finished up this deal. It's back. You can almost start to feel the excitement already. Vegas is going to have so much going on in the way of poker for the next 6 weeks. It's just unbelievable. Looking at
What do you think is going to happen to attendance in this post-Black Friday atmosphere? When you and I were talking earlier this year, before the online poker shutdown, we were saying that last year's 7,400 people was probably going to eclipse 8,000. Those numbers have got to be much lower this year. I don't know what the percentages were of people who qualified online. But, for instance, what do you think they get for the main event this year? What's your guess?
Well, for a number of reasons, it's going to be down. Obviously, the number of qualifiers is going to be down. From the other countries trying to come in here, the qualifiers even within the states is going to be a problem because of the online sites that have not qualifying them now. Actually, there's still a couple of things up in the air. Are the people going to be able to get their money, their funds released that are still tied up on the other sites?
Yep.
PokerStars has returned over $100 million to the players here in the U.S. You know, are the other sites going to be able to follow up? If I have to put a guess today, knowing what I know, knowing that attendance is going to be down, seeing what has happened in the last month, month and a half at some of the other major tournaments, I'll tell you what, I'll name a number you get to pick under or over. How's that?
Okay. All right, good.
5273.
Under.
No kidding. Yeah.
I snap call. I snap call the under.
Wow. I almost went higher.
Well, you know what? If we'd been doing a Chinese auction, maybe I would have gotten you higher, like Antonio and Phil would do. But no, I'm snap calling the under on the main event at 5273, only because of the two factors. One, the North American players, or rather the U.S. players, who will not be able to qualify online over the last, haven't been able to for the last month, and won't be able to for the next month and a half before the main event actually takes place. And as you said, all those people who won't be able to get their money off the sites that they have it besides PokerStars. And let's talk about that for just a moment here. Last week, Ultimate Bet and Absolute Poker's parent company did finally make a deal with the Department of Justice that will allow them to start figuring out how to give money back to U.S. players. The DOJ is not allowing them to have their domains back, but they can begin the process of figuring out how they're going to do that. Now, Full Tilt, which has had a deal with the DOJ for several weeks now, still hasn't figured that out either. Yesterday, they were supposed to give us an update, and the update came out, and it's essentially that there's nothing new. Here's what they said. Quote, since April 15th and the days immediately following, Full Tilt Poker faced numerous challenges and hurdles to ensuring the smooth operation of its international business and the orderly return of U.S. player funds. Full Tilt has worked tirelessly to address these issues and has made significant progress on both fronts. Full Tilt's international business operations are returning to normal while we focus on ensuring the safe and orderly return of U.S. player deposits. We're absolutely committed to making sure that U.S. players are refunded as soon as possible. We apologize for the delay and the fact that we underestimated the time it would take to work through these issues. We will update our U.S. players when we have more specific information to provide. In other words, we had nothing for you last week. We got nothing for you this week.
Oh, yeah, and they're getting ripped at the tables by the average poker player right now. They just want to know what's going on and when they're going to see their money. I don't know what's going on. I have no special insight to Full Tilt. Don't know what the hang-up is there. I do know a number of the guys over there, and I honestly think they will do everything they can to get the money back to the players. But there's obviously some serious problems going on.
Well, some people in some online forums and blogs have been doing some digging, and one of them looked into the terms and conditions of the Full Tilt software. You know, when you download the client for any of these, you click, you know, I agree. And, you know, same thing when you download iTunes. Who reads that? Nobody ever reads the small print. Well, somebody did and looked it up, and Section 8.9 of the terms and conditions of the Full Tilt software, quote, customer funds are not segregated from company funds, but it is the intention of Philco Limited to meet its liabilities as they fall due. Now, the fact that PokerStars was able to return things so quickly tells me that they had kept player money in a player money barrel and company money in a company money barrel so that they were able to empty one barrel without affecting the other one. If this is what's happened at Full Tilt and all the money's commingled, they're going to have a heck of a time getting that money separated and figuring out what money goes where, and maybe that's the delay.
Again, I don't have any special insight. If that's the case, you're absolutely right, because with the commingling of funds there, which I guarantee Stars did not do. In fact, that brings up another point that people need to realize. Stars is fully regulated. They abide by all the regulations, all the statutes, everything that's in place over there at the Isle of Man and under the English law. And one of those statutes, one of those particular laws, is that there will be no commingling. That money is to be kept separate. So, you know, I don't know anything about Full Tilt, so I can't really comment on that. I definitely hope that's not the situation, because the DOJ could have a heyday with that.
I agree.
I know it didn't happen at Stars. I know Stars was able to return the money with no problem. I'm telling you, and I've said it 100 times, and I'll say it again, Stars is an extremely ethical company. If they owe you money, they'll find a way to pay it.
Well, when it comes to Tilt and the players who have money on there, I think that if they don't get the money back to their players by the start of play at the World Series 2 weeks from today, A, that's going to hurt attendance, but B, that's really going to hurt any Full Tilt Red Pro, any American Red Pro who shows up to play at the World Series of Poker. And I wonder whether Howard Lederer and Chris Ferguson and Phil Ivey and Andy Block and some of the others who are big shots inside the world of Full Tilt Poker will show up there, and whether they will then be berated by players who have money locked up that they can't get their hands on. What do you think?
I think that's absolutely a scenario that could happen. If people are prohibited from playing through this the biggest event of the year, if people have to go out and borrow money or find new backers or whatever, when they have money sitting that they just can't access, they're going to be upset.
Yep.
You've got 2 weeks basically to get this resolved, and if it's not resolved in the 2 weeks, yeah, I'd hate to be sitting there at the table with knowing that I'm going to be berated, because it's going to happen.
Yep. Well, we haven't heard any public statements from Howard or from Chris Jesus Ferguson. We do know that they are no longer on the board of directors of the Poker Players Alliance. Who knows what all of this will mean in the long term, but, you know, going back to Ultimate Bet and Absolute Poker for just a second, Isaac Haxton is a guy who played on those sites. He had a bankroll online of $300,000. He's now putting it up for sale at 20 cents on the dollar.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but hasn't been on sale for about a week with no takers?
No takers. I'm not sure that anybody would take that money without knowing that you're absolutely going to get paid off. I mean, even saying, yeah, I'll take 300 grand for 60 grand, that's 60 grand out of your pocket and no guarantee that the 300's coming in.
Yeah, yeah. not good news at all. I honestly hope that that's all good result and that all the players get their money back. It's good for the players. If that happens, it would be good for the industry if it happens. And I know, like I said, a number of the guys over there at Full Tilt, I know they are trying to find a way to make this right.
Now, while we're talking about the... Me too. And while we're talking about the online poker world, Doyle Brunson has severed his ties with the online site that bears his name, doylesroom.com. He put out a statement saying, quote, "Reluctantly, I've decided to terminate my endorsement contract with doylesroom.com. It pains me to leave at this time. I have aspirations of reentering the online poker business when the United States government passes legislation that officially legalizes online poker sites. Doylesroom.com management has decided to continue to serve U.S. customers, although they believe they have the right to market the name Doyle's Room and to use my name and likeness for a period of time. I have asked them not to. Good luck, shuffle up and deal," unquote. Your reaction?
Not surprised. Doyle is an extremely intelligent and shrewd businessman, and if they're continuing to service U.S. players with his name and likeness up there, I'm sorry, at his age, yeah, he needs to sever his contract. I don't know whether he has any kind of ownership, whether it's just strictly an endorsement deal. I'm not privy to any information there. But, yeah, if I was Doyle, I would definitely be severing my ties also.
The last thing he needs is a legal bill paying his lawyers to fight off an indictment from the Department of Justice.
Yeah, yeah. Doyle's earned something a little bit better than to have those kind of headaches. He's, what, 77 years old now? He needs to be able to just relax and play poker and enjoy.
I agree. All right, also on the online front, the American Gaming Association, which represents brick-and-mortar casino companies like the one I'm sitting in now, Harrah's, and its parent company, Caesars Entertainment, they are working on their own online poker bill. We hear that a congressman in Texas by the name of Joe Barton is working on a new online poker bill. Gary Loveman, the CEO of Caesars, who we told you a couple of weeks ago had done an interview with Fortune magazine and written had some things positive to say about getting online poker passed in this country. This corporation filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission its first quarter financial results, and there was a paragraph in there saying, quote, "We believe strongly that the recent federal indictments of illegal online poker operators should convince Congress to allow American citizens to play online poker and to allow American companies to compete in a multi-billion dollar industry. By acting now to legalize a game enjoyed by millions of adult citizens, Congress can clarify ambiguous federal laws, generate tax revenues for federal and state governments, and bring thousands of jobs to this country." No surprise that a huge corporation that has a lot invested in poker, the owner of the World Series of Poker, would see this as an opportunity to perhaps grab the brass ring of online poker for itself.
Well, this is so ironic, though. I mean, there's a huge void. It's a big company. Logically, they want to try and fill that void, and they're going to put pressure on to do the very same thing we've been saying for the last couple of years. Let's regulate it. Let's clarify the laws. Let's get rid of the gray area. Let's go ahead and tax it. Let's make it comfortable, safe, and enjoyable for all Americans to do it. What is different from that rhetoric than what has been said by these online companies and by myself in Washington to the Congress? It's going to be so ironic that the very people that were pushing for this then get indicted, and that helps to speed this up.
You're absolutely right. You know, we'll see what happens now, but I do want to reinforce this notion, because when I play in live games, which is what I do when I play poker, I was never a big online player like you and Daniel and others. I've always been a live cash game, more than tournaments, player. Had some success in tournaments, but mostly I play cash games. And lately, a lot of young online players, having no place else to go, have been showing up and playing in the bigger cash games here in St. Louis. And they ask me, you know, what do you think is going to happen? And I say, I don't know, but I would predict that you are looking at 2 years minimum before you get the opportunity to play online again. Because even if legislation begins to roll through Congress again, you've got to get it through Congress, through the summer break into the fall. You got to get it passed by then. Next year, we're in an election year when their eyes are on the ballots and not the world of poker. And even if it happens then, it still has to be turned into some form of regulation. Some oversight group is going to have to be named. They're going to have to develop whatever the guidelines are. This is not something that by Labor Day of this year, you're going to suddenly see any company turning on a legal, regulated, licensed, and taxed online poker site. 2 years minimum, in my estimation. Am I wrong, Dennis?
Well, probably not. I do think it could happen quicker than that for only a couple of reasons. Number one, there are so many different government states, federal government or whatever, hurting for money, and they need to find revenue. It's been a recession. They need to find jobs. They need to have something positive out there, and there's a tremendous amount of negative publicity coming from these indictments. So there is a chance some of the stuff could move forward. There is a chance that they would be getting something accomplished. The problem is, and I think you've nailed it right there, government moves so slow that even if something gets started to be pushed forward, it's going to take them so long to get everything through all the different bureaus and then a new group formed to regulate this. I mean, I do see so many delays in it. Unfortunately, 2 years is probably an optimistic view. Could it be done quicker? Yes. Will it be done quicker? I find it hard to believe.
Yeah, me too. Unfortunately for people who are online players. Before Daniel Negreanu joins us, let me remind you that here at Harrah's St. Louis, you do have opportunities to go to the main event of the World Series of Poker. There will be six more chances to get in there in the month of May, two this Saturday, two this Sunday, and then two on the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend at noon and three on each of those days. They'll be doing the $200 buy-in double shootout format. As we've said many times, this is the one where 2.5 years ago, Dennis won a seat in the main event and turned that into $4.5 million when he came in third. Oh, and by the way, Dennis, Seth Polansky at the WSOP sent me a home media guide today, and in there is a list of the top 25 all-time money winners at the World Series of Poker. You are number 18 on the list now, wedged in between... Wedged in between the Grinder at number 19 and Scotty Wynn at number 17.
Okay, cool.
That counts your wins in 2008 and your remarkable deep run the following year again in 2009. So,
let's see if I can break back in the top 10 this year. How's that?
Well, that'd be really nice. That'd be sweet. 10th place is Paul Wasika with 6.2 million, so you'd have to earn about $1.5 million this year in various events at the World Series of Poker. But again, if you want to play in the main event this year, come down to Harrah's this weekend and play in these main event satellites, noon and 3, Saturday and Sunday, and then also on Saturday the 28th. The full schedule of tournaments, not just these, but the other tournaments that go on every day of the week here at Harrah's, you can find them at harrahs.com/STLpoker. And when you call, you can also find out about the new No Limit 6 Max game that they've started the last couple of Monday nights and which I hear is going very well. More information again at harrahs.com/STLpoker. All right, so this is the Final Table Poker Radio Show on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis, and we're now joined by a man who's way up there on the all-time money list, the all-time cashes list, the bracelets list, and so many other things. Daniel Negreanu, welcome back to the Final Table.
How you guys doing?
We're doing great, and we're very happy to talk to you again, particularly because of something that went down in the World Poker Tour Championship event at Bellagio this weekend. I was sorry that you got knocked out of it, but as I said at the top of the show, it means that we have an opportunity to talk to you about this and several other things. Let's just jump right into this kind of, I think, scandalous activity of a guy who the poker world considers a cheater being allowed to play in the WPT Championship. Give us your take and your perspective since you were there.
Well, unfortunately, it's not the first time that's happened, and it won't be the last unless we form some type of governing body, similar to what casinos do in Las Vegas with a black book for blackjack players, things like that. But in this case, a guy named Ali Tekamagamagak, or something along those lines, who was caught cheating at the Partouche Poker Tour event, was caught cheating once again earlier this January in Holland, I believe. He's barred from most casinos in Germany. He won his way into this WPT event by winning, I believe, a WPT Barcelona. So he gets a seat into the main. But again, documented proof on YouTube. You can see this guy. He was working with some media bloggers who were relaying information to him about his opponent's hand, caught pretty much red-handed. And, you know, I went over during the tournament to let everyone know at his table and in the room that he was a cheater. And strangely enough, the floor people told me, I need to stop. And I'm thinking, why are you protecting him? Okay, I'm trying to protect the other 200 people in the tournament, and you're protecting that scumbag. So that's essentially what happened on day one. I took a picture of him, put it on Twitter, and then on the day two again, when at his new table, I let Phil Hellmuth was there, Doyle Brunson, and the rest, and I pointed him out, and, you know, he came to step to me like he was going to do something, but, you know, I don't know. I'm not afraid to die, I guess.
Well, my understanding is that he did win this at the Spanish Championship, that it was a WPT, and that's how he qualified for it. Now, he claims that, of course, he's innocent for this thing, and he actually has a lawsuit against him trying to claim damages of £200,000 for his reputation and £1.5 million for lost prizes. So I
He's actually, for lack of a better term, what I'd call crazy. Yeah, I mean, just flat-out nutcase, really, because there's, like, again, there's plenty of evidence that they have surveillance cameras, and it was pretty damn clear this guy's a scumbag cheat. So, but, you know, I mean, you ever hear that song by Shaggy? Wasn't me, but I saw you on the counter. Wasn't me, but I saw you on the sofa. Wasn't me. I even got it on camera. You know, some people will deny, and until, you know, they're just denied out.
We should point out that Daniel was not the only one who called him out. Scott Seaver was actually at his table and pointed it out to the other players. Hey, there's a cheater here. I don't know how far that went, although I'm guessing that Scott was not shy about sharing his opinions about this. The irony is that this guy made it to today. He's one of the final 52 in the WPT Championship. Is he even a good player, Daniel?
I have no idea. But I will say this. You know, Scott did mention some things, and then Scott was in fear, like genuine fear, because he was physically threatened by this scumbag. The floor was alerted, and their response was, well, he probably shouldn't have called him a cheater. And it just floored me. I mean, he's physically threatened by a crazy person and, you know, has to fear for his safety, if you will. And it's just unfortunate that as a community, we are a bunch of wimps. I mean, we saw this with the UB fiasco. They were scumbag cheats. Everyone knew it. And instead of shutting them from the poker world and not letting them in our, you know, environment, we just too scared to stand up and do anything. So they were allowed to operate and function for many years despite being run by scumbags and cheats.
Now, Daniel, well, you tweeted. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dennis.
No. Well, I was going to change it, but it's the same thing. We have to find some way to do this. I remember talking to Jeffrey Pollack after the Tournament of Champions they had, where they brought back all of the living former main event champions. He said he was obligated to send a letter to Russ Hamilton inviting him. But he said, I handwrote on the bottom, don't show up. I can't even guarantee your safety. And he did not show up. But he felt obligated to send him that letter. Now, why the heck should we send a letter there to a guy like that to invite him?
Well, because the bottom line right now is we don't really have any sort of cohesive group that would govern our game. You know, if somebody does something, for example, like where do we draw the line? Like if someone was cheated online multi-counting, should they be barred from live tournaments? There's a lot of these types of questions that, you know, we need to answer. If someone cheated in a tournament in Australia, should that bar him from the World Series of Poker? We really need to, I think, you know, any tournament has the right reserve the right to forbid anyone from playing in an event. I think that there should be a governing group of, like, you know, 8 to 10 people on a panel who say, okay, you know what, this person's shown repeated actions of cheating or, you know, basically just cheating. I think that's the only thing you should really bar people for. And, you know, they're not welcome to play in the tournaments anymore.
I see. I think it can go even further than that. I don't think you need any oversight organization. I just think you need to have the organizations that run these tournaments agree in the same way that brick-and-mortar casinos have this company, the Griffin Company, that puts together the Griffin Book, which is a book full of people who are not allowed to play in casinos for companies that subscribe
right.
to but that service. So
right, but essentially that's the same thing. It's essentially what you would need is all the different tours and all the different groups agreeing to organize something like along these lines. And there would have to be some organization in terms of everyone agreeing on players and having enough evidence to make sure that, you know, if he's been cheating in a WPT, he should be barred from an EPT or a World Series of Poker event as well.
And just to explain for our listeners, the people who go in the Griffin book are not people who necessarily ripped off the casino or cheated. You can go in the Griffin book if you're a blackjack card counter. If you're really good and you're winning a lot, they can say to you, you know what, you're not allowed on our property anymore. And your name will go in the book, and other properties can look in that book, and they can bar you from their premises as well. And as far as I'm concerned, if you can get barred from a casino for counting cards in blackjack, that's not illegal, that's not a crime, you were not cheating, then here's a guy who is not only suspected of cheating, but there's video evidence of him and his colleagues doing it. That should be enough for every organization to say, you can't play here. So that brings me back to the question I was going to ask you, Daniel. You tweeted that you were going to talk to the WSOP about this. Have you asked Jack Effel what he will do if this Ali guy shows up this summer at the Rio?
Well, I will tell you this. As far as the World Series of Poker is concerned, I think we are safe from any cheater named Ali Tekagadagalamagak because, you know, Jack did come into the room yesterday. He hasn't said anything publicly about it, and it's not something that he necessarily needs to address on a player-by-player basis, but I feel confident that he would not be welcome to play in the World Series of Poker.
Dennis, is that fair?
At this stage, absolutely. He can claim his innocence and everything like that, but there's enough a number of times and a number of evidence. I mean, they actually had a person there with false media credentials representing a magazine that didn't exist. There's just so many things in there it's going to be very difficult for him to prove any kind of innocence. Why do we want to have him there while he's under a cloud?
The problem with what happens with the Bellagio WPT and why he's there is it just comes out of being chicken and fearing a lawsuit, okay? Because, I mean, the WPT and Bellagio have every right to say to this guy, you know what, you won your $25,000, you get that, but you're not welcome in this tournament. They don't do that for fear of being prosecuted in some way, and it's just easier to let it happen. And then they hope that people like me will shut their mouth and not say anything. Well, if you've known me for any sort of time in the poker world, shutting my mouth is something I'm not very good at, especially when it comes to injustices like this. And I feel like they were just chicken shit, yellow-bellied, like, you know, not willing to really make a stand in the spot where they should have. Instead of protecting the 200 players in the field, they sat by this guy and put a security guard next to him to protect his rights.
Wow. And Dennis mentioned that some of this guy's colleagues had fake media credentials, and what was happening was they were hanging around the table looking at this guy's opponent's cards, sneaking a peek, and then giving him signals. It was almost like the cheating that went on in the gin game in The Flamingo Kid. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah.
Fat Sid was sitting back there using his fingers on his belly to show Phil what was going on there. And I will point out that partially because of this, the WSOP has a new rule for media, which is you can walk around in the floor while the tournament's going on, but you can't hang around any one table for more than 5 minutes. And after you leave that table, it's got to be a half hour before you can come back. That's got to be fallout from this, right, Daniel?
I wouldn't say partial. I would say 100% because of this, because of what happened here. This guy was playing against people, and the blogger just somehow always seemed to end up right behind his opponent in the hand. You know, it's unfortunate when stuff like this happens because, you know, the 99.9% of the media, you can trust them fully, and they're just there to do their job. And now their job is going to be a little more difficult because of that scumbag and the bloggers that were working with him. And, you know, I applaud the World Series for trying to secure the safety and integrity of the game and realizing that this is an issue and it could be with having, you know, bloggers that they don't necessarily know as well. So they're doing the right thing. It's just unfortunate that, you know, it's like similar to, you know, the sort of the airport screening thing. It's like mostly completely unnecessary, but in the case that it might help a little bit, it's something that I think needed to be done.
It's just so gripes. We have fought for years to get a better reputation for the poker community. We've worked with charities. We've done everything in the world we can, and then stuff like this comes out there and just sets us back another 5 years. I don't know. People are going to read about
that. Well, it's not even over yet because, I mean, if this guy wins or if this guy makes the final table, you have a whole new publicity storm surrounding the fact that they allowed him to play in the event and the fact that he should absolutely not be in the event.
Yeah. We're talking with Daniel Negreanu here on the final table with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis. Speaking of things that you've tweeted recently, you said something about possibly getting a place in Toronto so you can continue to play online. As a Canadian citizen, you can still go back there, establish residence at home again, and play. How serious are you about doing that?
Well, I'm thinking about, I'm sort of targeting the W Coop, which is going to be, you know, I think in September. And I'm thinking I'd like to maybe, and I think it might be fun to have a condo that is right in the middle of the city downtown, right near, like, you know, all the action, restaurants, clubs, and, you know, the sporting events, things like that. And I wouldn't necessarily, I mean, I don't know, I'm going to have to double check on whether or not this is legal or I can do it, but I wouldn't necessarily make it my primary residence. It would be something that, you know, I'd still live in Vegas, have the condo, and then, you know, when I'm playing the EPTs and stuff, I'd go a week early, spend a week in Toronto, play online, and then, of course, you know, in all the free countries in Europe, because most of, you know, all of them are free, I'd play online in and around tournaments that I was playing on the EPT.
Do you have a second bedroom up there?
I think I might be getting one, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I joked when this all came down, we should all invest in a nice condo tower, maybe even in, not in Toronto or Vancouver, but somewhere in the middle of Canada. We can call it Panorama North.
Yeah, exactly.
What are your plans for the World Series this summer? Obviously, you're going to be in there playing a bunch of events. Are you going to be playing any of the smaller events in an attempt to get the bracelet count up, or are you going to stick to big stuff?
Well, I'm sort of targeting roughly in the neighborhood of winning about 10 bracelets. It may seem, you know, difficult to do, and it probably will be hard to win 10, but that's the goal, is to come home with at least 10. If I win more than that, hey, great. But the plan this year is to play a full schedule, all the big events, all the 10Ks, as well as, because now you get four levels of late registration in the 5 p.m. events, so essentially you can play a 5 p.m. event and get in at 10:45 p.m. And so that means you could play the noon event, which will finish around midnight, and you can jump into the other events still and play both. So I'll be doing a lot of double dipping, it seems like, which allows me to play more of the 1500s than I normally do, because now, if, you know, if it's 11 o'clock and I'm still in the 1500, that means I'm probably doing pretty good in it. So
yeah,
I don't have to necessarily skip them where I would before to play in the 10Ks. I'm going to probably be doing a lot of double dipping and, you know, playing 15 hours a day for 6 weeks, that's all.
Has anybody taken you up on your bracelet bet yet?
Yeah, I got some people that have bet a 3-1, so I'm looking to break them by winning at least. Hey, I should take a price on winning like 10, because, you know, no one's ever won 10 in a year, right?
Absolutely.
I'm looking for a price.
Well, now, we got surprised here at the WPT with 220 people signed up for it. We were expecting more like 150, 160. The 10K events, the big events, and including the main event, how are they going to be affected by Black Friday? What kind of a turnout do you think we're going to get in June?
Oh, I think it's going to be significant, aside from the fact that a lot of people don't have their money from, you know.
Well, we lost Daniel. Okay, you know what? It's a perfect time to take a break. We'll come back and see if we can reconnect with him as the Final Table Poker Show continues from Harrah's St. Louis and Las Vegas here on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast via iTunes and on thechipleader.com.
Kits, does your granny lend you money? Well, this granny does. And right now, calling 800-GRANNY-8 will get you $50,000 for just $238 per month. Call 800-GRANNY-8. Get a low fixed rate and take a 3-month payment break. That's 90 payment-free days to get your finances straight. Our customers are saving hundreds per month, and our friendly loan officers make it easy. Call 800-GRANNY-8 or apply online at granny8.com.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris at the featured table of the Poker Room of Harrah's St. Louis. We're talking with Kid Poker, Daniel Negreanu, who tweets as Real Kid Poker on Twitter. Big hockey fan and big Survivor fan and big friend of the sole survivor, the guy who took it down on Sunday night, Boston Rob Mariano. Have you talked to him since then?
Yeah, I did. I didn't watch it live because I was busy playing, but then Eric came over to the house, and Eric Lindgren, and we watched together. It was just, I couldn't be. I mean, I spoke to him after. I texted him, and I just couldn't be prouder and happier for him. I know how hard he worked for it and how much he wanted it. And, you know, that was the best performance I've ever seen on Survivor. I mean, he really played the game absolutely perfect in every way. He manipulated every situation to his favor, and just, I mean, he did an amazing job. He just owned it. It was just awesome to see, and he's such a great guy. I mean, the thing that annoys you sometimes, you see the show and people, like, question his, you know, he's deceptive, he's lying. I'm like, it's a game. I mean, that would be like playing poker without bluffing. It's part of the game. It doesn't make up who he is, you know. Like, if I was on the show with Boston Rob and he blindsided me, I'd laugh it off and go, you son of a gun, you got me. I'll get you next time. It's a game, you know. You can't get too personal in a situation like that when you're playing for $1 million. But I was just extremely proud. I was cheering here at the TV.
Yeah, he was so way out in front of everybody else. It was almost like he was the pro at the table and everybody else was a fish.
It absolutely came off like that. And he did a really good job. I tweeted this, that he did a really good job of getting Natalie under his wing and Philip, who had no chance, and basically people that couldn't really think for themselves and they couldn't win on their own. He basically guided them. And when you do that, when you have that sort of power in numbers, you know, it really makes it a lot easier for you to get to the end. And at the end, in the tribal, it's like, everything that Natalie and Philip said was kind of like, okay, yeah, well, Rob wins. Like, yeah, we see that. Thanks. Rob didn't even have to say anything. It was so obvious.
Absolutely right.
All right, well, we've seen Annie Duke on The Apprentice. Now, we've seen, right, we even had Phil Hellmuth tweeting that he might be on Dances with the Stars. Is there a show or a reality show or not, but is a show that you'd like to be on, Daniel? Something you'd like to, want to be a dead body on NCIS?
The one show that the game that I would love, and I think it's so interesting, is Survivor, because there's so much to it. There's such a mental game. There's so much strategy involved. They're like, eating nasty stuff is not really for me, but, I mean, if I would ever go on Survivor, I would actually get Rob to train me for, like, a couple months beforehand. And I'm a vegan, which means, you know, I don't eat any meat or any dairy. But if I were to go on that show, I think it just makes sense to learn how to eat fish, because seems like that's what they end up eating a lot of. So I wouldn't want to go on there and get sick because my body can't handle meat. But I would. That's the one show that I could see myself really enjoying, despite the fact that it's just a miserable 30 days.
You think you could handle it physically?
Not right now. I don't think I can handle it physically. But if I were to go on the show and I knew it, I would work out like crazy. I would learn how to make fire. I'd learn how to make huts. I mean, like I said, I would talk to Rob about all the sort of different things that I should be looking out for, and it's something that I definitely could see myself doing, hopefully in the future. I don't know if they'd have me, but
I'd also recommend
try to win poker bracelets.
I'd also recommend going back and watching the Bobby Balan season and just doing the opposite of whatever he did.
Well, actually, what you don't know about that is I was asked to go on that, and then they were looking for a poker player, but I couldn't because they were during the World Series of Poker, and so Bobby came to me the day before he went on the show. The day before he flew out, and he knew that I was a big fan, and he asked me for advice. I gave him three pieces of advice, okay? I'll give them to you. Number one, I said, be very likable and make sure the women really like you, okay, because they're the key to the game. Number two, I said, don't talk loudly in open areas because people will be able to hear you. And number three, don't call anyone out early. On the first show, he was in the middle of a lake talking about how he's going to bang one of those girls, and then 20 minutes later, he was calling out the guy who ultimately won and says, you're the brains behind the thing. I'm like, no, you don't listen very well, Bobby. Yeah. Episode one.
Have you heard from Annie Duke about the Federated Poker League, and what are your thoughts on that?
Jeffrey Pollock reached out to me, and
okay.
He asked if he asked if it would be okay if Annie were to call me or anything like that. And I said to him, I told him, this is my rule in life. I said, the people that I like, they know I like them because I talk to them and I'm friendly with them. And if I don't like you and I don't want to deal with you, I don't want to talk to you, and I make it clear. That way, the people that are really my friends know they're my genuine friends. So I told him absolutely not. I don't want to have a discussion with her. I have no interest in, making right what is wrong. I have no interest. There's certain people in my life I just have no, certain people you're just not going to be friends with. I don't want to waste my time pretending. So I have no interest in speaking to her, like, basically for the rest of my life if I could.
So does that mean that you're absolutely not playing in the Federated League, even if Jeffrey extends the hand and invites you?
No, that's not the case. I mean, first of all, they have a lot of questions to answer in terms of not only what this league is, what is their TV deal, what are the players going to be expected to do, what online site situation are they trying to create, because that's the obvious revenue stream. How does that conflict with Poker Stars and Full Tilt and other things like that? Where does this money come from? Do they have the money raised? Is the location secure? Is the network secure? Again, there's like a whole bunch of questions that haven't been answered. I can't make a decision on something that doesn't quite exist yet. You know, it's a theory at this point, it's a thought, but the pieces haven't been put into place. So when that all is taken care of, I'll take a look at it, and if it makes sense for me to play in, I would play in it. But again, I'm not optimistic about this thing being a success, based on the fact that they haven't told anyone their business plan, and when they do, that's going to raise some red flags, because it's blatantly obvious that their goal is to create a company that they can take online, you know, create an online gaming site. That's the only logical step. So I don't know if that's going to necessarily sit well with a lot of the players who they'd be expecting to play.
Well, Annie said on this show last week that they do have a TV deal. She's not ready to announce it yet, but she said it's with a major network and a really good time slot, and that they do have sponsors lined up. But my follow-up question to you is, at $20,000 a pop, in this post-Black Friday environment that we're living in, are there going to be enough of these 200-plus players who've been invited to continually play in four or five of these events in the course of a year? That's you got to have a pretty big bankroll to cough up $100,000 for these five events, plus the other tournaments that go on during the rest of the year.
Right. Before I address that, I'll address the initial comments. I mean, there's a thread about a mile long of lies and contradictions that came out of her mouth. So when she says, "I have a TV deal," and she says she has all these things, you know, it's one of those things where you believe it when you see it. She represented UB when after the scandal happened and went on a lying rampage where she, in the same conversation, I'm not making this up, there's like actual documented proof, because there's audio tape. She said it on radio. So, like I said, when it comes to what they have, I'll believe it again when I see it. And if they do, I'll reassess and decide whether or not I want to take part in this thing. As for the amount of the money, I think that it's a small enough field. And if the theory is that they're going to add a bunch of money to it, I think that some of those players could get sponsorship, and you could still see fields of 150 to 160 players playing in it. But again, that's all sort of, I don't know, I don't even like really think about that at this point, because I haven't seen any of the, I think they've done an amazing job PR-wise of convincing the world that this is like a done deal and it's all happening and it's like for sure, without giving us any details about the meat of it. It's just, you know, all the fluff, and there hasn't been any discussion of what's the business plan. You know, it's kind of a big deal.
Well, I kind of wonder if it's even a good idea. What are your thoughts on that? Do we really need an upper level of PGA type of an environment and setup and tournament where only those handful of people that are selected are able to play?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think something. I mean, there it could. The PGA model is one that's, it's owned by the players. So this is very different. You know, they throw that term around, you know, it's the PGA Tour model. The PGA Tour model is very different because, again, it's the players own it. This isn't the case with this thing. As to whether it makes sense, it really depends on how it's shot, on the structure of it, on how much poker fans really want to, you know, see it. Because, you know, here's the tough part with poker on television is there is a certain degree of the fact that, like, people want to see familiar faces and people that they know. When you go to a field of, like, 200 players, you're not necessarily going to get that unless you shoot it really well. And a lot of the faces are not necessarily, you know, exciting TV. Like, say, you know, the new poker story for a lot of young players is, you know, I was at MIT, I went to college, I started playing 20 tables, micro grinding, and then became an online grinder. You know, in the old days, it was like, you know, I was a pool hustler. I was an oil tycoon saloon. You know, the people had like just a little more depth in stories than the old guard did. And today it's much more similar, and it's a slightly less. It's a lot more difficult to sell as exciting. You know, everyone wearing hoodies and sunglasses and not talking. That's not necessarily great TV. So,
how good of a television product sometimes depends upon who's at the table. And with a tournament, you can never guarantee who's going to be at a table.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis, talking with Daniel Negreanu, the four-time bracelet winner. 21 final tables at the World Series of Poker in his career, plus WPT titles and so much more. Since we were talking about buy-ins and bankrolls a moment ago, again, in this post-Black Friday environment, is it possible for someone to be a touring pro without those sponsorships that were there from the online sites and other places? Could an American player without a patch still go around and make a living?
Well, the answer to that question is real simple. Depends who, okay? There's different degrees of skill. And, you know, you can call yourself a professional, but that doesn't mean you're as good as Phil Ivey. Phil Ivey could go around and be a touring pro and make a lot of money. I believe wholeheartedly I could go around and tour and make a lot of money. There's going to be a whole bunch of guys who are sponsored pros that are going to realize that aside from paying juice and travel and tournament fees and hotel and all those types of things, that they're going to realize that they're break even or you know, possibly not able to overcome the expenses, and they won't be able to play all of the big events. I think a lot of people, you know, who were sponsored pros, a lot of time it comes from a score too. You know, you get a nice deal and takes care of you, but it's very, very different also. There's a different type of stress and pressure when, you know, you're playing your own money and, you know, you have to add, you know, you have food on the table, you have to pay rent, and it's based on, you know, how you do at the tables. At one point, there were so many sponsored pros that it's almost like people can become complacent. Like, hey, you know what, I got a cushy job, I'm all right. But it'll be interesting to see how those players either how they react to that, whether or not they elevate their game and work harder, or they just fade and do something else.
On the other hand, I know Dennis has seen this too, we both run into plenty of young guys and middle-aged guys, for that matter, who will go around and they'll show up, you know, if there's a circuit event or a WPT event or a big tournament going on at some casino within a 5 or 6 hour drive from their house. And from St. Louis, you can get to a half a dozen cities, from Chicago all the way down to Tunica, to Louisville, to so many other places, to the Hollywood outside casinos, outside Cincinnati. And they'll go around and they won't buy into the big 10K or even 5K events, but they're grinding out a pretty good living on the road without a patch on their chest, playing the 350s and the 550s.
You know, that is essentially that, you know, poker takes a step back in the sense that that is going to have to be the approach for a lot of people. And what I mean is basically like satellites. When I started playing poker in my early 20s, I didn't just buy into World Series events. I played satellites, you know, and if I won satellites, I would sometimes just play satellites just to make money. But then other times I would use it to actually play, because you could sell the chips. But I think that it would be foolish for people with, say, like $100,000 or $200,000 bankroll to play 10Ks on a regular basis, because it's just not enough of a flow. You know, you can go 15, 20 tournaments without a cash, and if you do that, you're just broke. So to be smart, you really should subsidize by either playing cash games or by, you know, playing smaller tournaments or satellites. And also, you know, you have to assume that in the United States specifically, the 10K fields are going to get tougher when you have a lot less of the recreational players or the mediocre players playing, and you have more of the professionals just, you know, fighting against each other.
Well, I think we're going to see an increase in the satellites, even at the World Series over here. I still play satellites sometimes. I still think it's an excellent way to get into the fields and kind of tone your game up. There's a lot of different strategy when you're playing like a sit-and-go, when you're sitting there playing with two or three pretty good players and the rest of them guys that are just trying to climb up there. So I like playing satellites myself. I've been playing them, and I'm going to continue to play them.
And we have a lot of listeners who are going to be going to their first ever World Series of Poker in a couple of weeks, who may never play in a bracelet event because they can't afford the $1,000 buy-in. But, you know, they could play in these satellites that they're going to have at the Rio for as little as $75, and there'll be all sorts of daily deep stacks and mega satellites and all sorts of things going on there on a regular basis, which is where I really think the future of poker now lies, not in the big 10, 25, 50, 100, $250,000 buy-ins, but for the people who are, you know, grinding out some recreational fun in 1-2 and 1-3 and 2-5 and 5-10 games, who go out to the tournaments and, you know, they'll try to play some of these smaller events and then work their way into some of the cash games. Don't we have to build the business from the bottom up, Daniel?
What you've just described is exactly what poker looked like 9-10 years ago. Exactly. That's exactly what people used to do. So it's really, when you say to look to the future, it's really essentially at the same time look to the past. Back then, there was a 110K a year, the main event. That's it. The rest of the tournaments were 1, 3, 500. The thousands were considered big. But obviously, with online poker and the popularity of it on television, things have grown, and it's a different animal now in that there's just more people. But I agree with you that there's just going to be more people doing the same kind of thing, which is playing smaller buy-in events. And the World Series experience is available for everyone. I mean, like you mentioned, if you're a small-time grinder, you can play those small events. If you want to play big, you can play the 10Ks. There's really something there for everyone. You don't have to play in the bracelet events to get a feel for the World Series of Poker experience.
Daniel, at the beginning of this show, I asked Dennis to give me a number, an over-under number for the main event this year. He said 5,273, and I snap called on the under. What do you say?
3,284.
Oh, my gosh.
Under 5,000, I bet. I'll bet under 5,000 for a lot of money.
I'm on your side there. I think we may be able to take Dennis for a couple of bucks.
Maybe. Unless Dennis has a plan to stake about 2,000 people that I don't know about.
I think Seth and Jack just had a heart attack. So.
But you know what? Again, it's not about the field of the main event. That's the number that gets all the publicity. But if they're getting people in there for the rest of these things, I think that they can still have a fairly healthy year, and they've had a lot of people at the bottom end who are not qualifying for the main event but still show up to play poker.
No, I don't see that either. I think that, if you talk about, let's say, the stud eight or better, the 10Ks, I think we could see tournaments with as few as, 60 to 70 people in some of those 10Ks. I think that it's a significant hit because the type of players that generally play in those, a lot of their money's either A, tied up online, or B, a lot of them, depend on people who depend on that kind of money to stake them. I have a stable of guys that I stake, and, I'm not going to be putting them into these events because I think they're going to be tougher and I think the fields are going to be smaller across the board. So I don't see much. I'm being realistic, and I don't see much optimism in terms of numbers. I think the numbers will be down across the board.
Do you think the 1Ks will still draw? Is it possible that a 1K event on the first weekend, which 2 years ago drew over 6,000 people, do you think it's possible we'll have more players in the first 1K than we will in the main?
Yeah, I do. I think that's actually an interesting question because I've never thought of that, but it is possible. You might have 5,500 people in that, and then, the main event just, again, the key in the main event is the majority of the people that are in that thing got in by playing online tournaments and satellites, and that's not going to be the case. With Poker Stars, Full Tilt, and the scumbags, out of the market, you're going to be looking at a lot of people that are not just going to take $10,000 of their hard-earned money to play in one tournament.
Yep, you're right.
I do think I think we'll see a pretty good cash game going there, and I think we'll see a lot of satellites. I would imagine the megas and the super satellites and the other things are actually going to see an increase, people trying to find a way to get into these big events.
I would agree with that. Again, a lot of people want to play in this thing, and now they don't have as many opportunities to play in $1 steps. So their only real choice right now is to come out to the World Series and, start grinding the super satellites and satellites. So, yeah, I agree with Dennis there. You might see a major influx in satellite play, but I think across the board the numbers in the events will be down.
Hi, Daniel. We really appreciate you coming on here last minute. Sorry that you couldn't make it to the fourth day of the WPT Championship, but I'm glad it afforded us the opportunity to talk to you again because it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
All right, guys. No worries.
There's Daniel Negreanu. We will see him again at the Rio in just a few weeks, I'm sure. Before we run out of time here, Dennis, you're headed off to Jennifer Harmon's charity event this weekend in Reno, right?
Absolutely will be. Heading up there to Reno, we'll have a huge thing. Jennifer is expecting 600 to 800 people to play in this charity event, and then we're going to stay there for another day or two. The Pepper Mill in Reno has renovated the entire poker room. Supposedly, it's now one of the top rooms in all of Nevada, and I'm looking forward to checking that out. The Heartland Tour, Todd Anderson, I talked to him this morning, and they say this may be the biggest Heartland Tour they've ever had, this event.
Oh, I didn't even know it was a Heartland Tour. That'll be great. You'll report on that for us next week. from Reno. Thanks to you for listening. We appreciate it. Our show brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis. Go online at harrahs.com/STL poker for the full tournament schedule and for the days when you can qualify for the WSOP main event this Saturday and Sunday, and also Saturday the 28th. We're also brought to you in part by Homestead Financial Mortgage. For great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8. With Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas, I'm Paul Harrah's in St. Louis on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. And those podcasts you can find all the time on thechipleader.com.